Okay, so it's very clear, as we all know, especially following a yontif, that it's clear that halacha places significance and not small significance on the proper treatment of animals. They're certainly not on a par with human beings, nor would we expect them to be. Already, if we are going to take from our parasha and Bereishis, in the creation of man, Adam Rishon is uniquely referred to as a nefesh chaya, and the Targum as a ruach mamala. A ruach mamala, a spirit that can communicate, the ability to speak, and we'll say the intellectual capacity of man for communication, already puts us in a different realm and a more sophisticated purpose in creation. And that's why man is created last, man is created separately from all other animals, man is given the task to name the animals, and it's clear from the narrative already in Bereishis, that Adam Rishon has more of a purpose, and there's more that he is charged with from the time that Kadosh Baruch Hu puts him on this world. But, Aval Pi Chein, there is a great regard for proper treatment of animals. And Karbanos, it's interesting, you know, in the morning we say, Moser Adam in a Behema Ayin, that man isn't really anything more special than animals. So it's true as a possibility, but it isn't really the goal. There's a danger that a person can end up living their life, living not much more sophisticated than an animal, not much more elevated than a behemoth, but that's not the desired outcome of a productive life here on earth. But it is interesting that in the original plan, as it were in Gan Eden, this is what Noam was referring to, Adam wasn't given animals to eat, only plants. The permission to eat animals may not have come until later following the Mabul. Now, the truth is, even though that's how people usually think of it, that's actually debated by the Rishonim. Some understand that Adam HaRishon and his descendants before the Mabul were allowed to eat animals, just that they couldn't slaughter them first. So if they died of other causes, the meat would be permissible. It wasn't that they couldn't consume any meat whatsoever. Okay. Guys, you still hear me? Yeah, sorry about that. Okay. So in any case, halacha places a great value on avoiding tzar bali chayim. Not only that, but the Mefarshim suggests, very interesting, going back to Yaakov, right after the story of the fight with Esav that we were discussing before, it could be that it was Yaakov's contribution to society, Klal Yisrael's contribution, but Yaakov specifically to introduce this notion of being protective of tzar bali chayim. How do we know that? Because if you look in Parshas Vayishlach, after Yaakov, he was returning from the house of Lavan, and it comes to a place where he ends up spending a significant amount of time. Yaakov nasa sukosa, v'yivin lo bayis lo mikneo asa sukos, akim kara, shem ha-makom sukos. Before he gets back to his father's house, Yitzchak's house, he stops in a place called Sukos. Why is that place called Sukos? So this is a pasuk that's often quoted this time of year during Sukkos, because Yaakov built a home for his family, and for his cattle, he built booths, he made tents. Sukkos mamish, that the animal stayed in, and the town, the area, the region where he settled during that period of time became known as Sukkos for the animal huts. So the Mefarshim asked the Chidah and the Orchaim, why is it that they named the place after the doghouse, right? If it was so important that he built a place for his family and a place for his animals, which would you use as the namesake for that location, for that new town, that new city, that new village? Chori, you would choose the place where the humans are living. So Elamai, it was such a chiddush. This is what the Aruch Haim says, the Chidah says. It was such a chiddush to create a barn, to build some sort of shelter for the animals, that was the significance of his settlement, because it really wasn't something that people had done in the past to build the shelter, the barn for the cattle. So the Tzar Bali Chaim is our contribution in a sense. But let's try to take a little time to focus on what exactly is the Torah's attitude, not just towards the proper treatment of animals, but specifically eating animals. It is true that we are told, and this has been substantiated Torah motto by the experts, that shechita is the most humane form of shechting an animal. But why should we even be consuming the animal in the first place? We can spend a day or two on this. It's not going to be an exhaustive treatment of the subject, but I want to at least offer a few perspectives, certainly from sources that may be less familiar or aren't always marshaled in this topic. So without going too far, if you were asked about the topic, it's obvious that the Torah is geared with, I guess we could say, carnivorous Jews in mind. Karbanos clearly assume an important place in halacha, and by extension, the consumption of meat, not only for the regular people, but even more so Kohanim, the holiest people, also partake in meat, and they eat from the karbanos, including many that only Kohanim are allowed to eat from. Shabbos and Yom Tov call for delicacies, and meat dishes are given special accord, same for Sudas Mitzvah, and some say that at certain Sudas Mitzvah or Shabbos and Yom Tov, they're indispensable. You can't have a Sudas Mitzvah. You shouldn't have a Sudas Mitzvah without meat. Rosh Hashanah is of the opinion that a bris should be fleishik. It's like no different than any other Sudas Mitzvah, right? You wouldn't have a milchik chasana, so you wouldn't have a milchik bar mitzvah. You shouldn't have a milchik bris. I remember telling that to my wife early on when we were married, and she thought that was so surprising. Most people do, right? Who has fleishik so early in the morning? But I was very insistent. I said, we're gonna have fleishik bris. As Rav Shachter said, I remember at the son-in-law of Rav Shachter, he made a bris. There were two sides of the room. There was a fleishik buffet and a milchik buffet, so you could take your pick if you weren't ready for the fleishik so early in the morning. But I always say that Hakadosh Baruch Hu paskind, because my twin boys, our only boys, were born on Shabbos. So the suda for the Shabbos bris was taka fleishik. So Hakadosh Baruch Hu paskind, like Rav Shachter, we should have a fleishik bris. So some say it's indispensable for a suda mitzvah. So it's definitely part of the program. So to speak. And it may be understandable for someone to refrain from meat, at least to some degree, if their health or their diet would require it, which is true for many other dietary issues that intersect with halacha. Celiac, and challah or matzah, some people can't tolerate wine or alcohol, so we have ways of dealing with it when it's necessary. And the same is true when it comes to meat. So likewise, there's no value in overindulging either. Even if it's mutter to have meat, there's a notion, l'shem shemayim, for people to refrain from certain delicacies at certain times, including meat, for all people during the 9 days, and maybe for people who are on a higher spiritual level or have more lofty aspirations to focus on the spiritual. That's really what the Ramban writes famously in the midst of Kedoshim Tiyu, right at the beginning of the Parsha's Kedoshim, said that mitzvah teaches that even things that within the realm of the other 612 mitzvos are mutter, right? There's nothing inherently wrong with kosher meat, but when someone eats too much of a good thing, such as meat, or makes eating, I think this is even more important, agdara, make eating or anything, especially meat, not even an obsession, but a preoccupation, something you need, something you invest a lot of time and planning and effort into, when your physical pleasure begins to eclipse the spiritual priorities, so that's indeed a problem that the Torah warns us to be mindful of. If you have a Jewish magazine and you flip through the ads, and in June, July, and August, more of the ads are for which supermarket has a better grill section, and which one has a smokehouse, and which one, has more options in terms of the flesh, Then advertisements for shiurim and yeshivas and the spiritual side of things. So then we have to watch out that we're not encroaching on a violation of Kedoshim Tiyu. What's our preoccupation? Both physical health and spiritual health are indeed places where the meat can find its limitation. So that's beseder. That's within the realm of hashkafa. But as Rabbi Victor Miller put it, if someone chooses to be a vegetarian for moral or ethical reasons, that almost can border on a form of kfira. Right? Because if, not every vegetarian feels this way, obviously, but if someone would feel that the ethical system of the Torah is not absolute and primary and supreme, because it's a Kosher Baruch Hu's value system, right? So Rachman al-Tzan to suggest that it's flawed, and you're coming to be more righteous than the Torah's value system in your preservation of Tzar Baal Chaim, not eating, so that you're undermining the Torah's representation of Kosher Baruch Hu's wisdom and truth, or HaKadosh Baruch Hu's perfection, which could exist outside of this area as well. There's always areas of Torah where a person may not fully understand what the Hashkaf is saying, and Aval Pi Kan has to be makabel. Neshach Chachma writes that specific to this area, right? An animal karbanos, there is a hakpada in certain karbanos specifically. There's a hakpada that the makar, the kohen who brings the karban, specifically has to be the one to eat it. He may be able to share it with others, but he should be able to eat it from it to concretize and demonstrate the belief and the notion that the karbanos are a valid and correct means of serving Hashem, ethically and morally appropriate. So he's got to not just walk the walk, talk the talk. He has to do everything, even if that may be at the expense of the animal. And that's part and parcel of Kabbalah's Olam HaShemayim, which the all-important function of Shema includes. And the words of our salvation, just to read one line from a famous lecture that he once gave to Rabbanim. So why do we, what do we surrender to the Almighty? What is Kabbalah's Olam HaShemayim? Where is the surrender to the Almighty? This is his Lashon. We surrender first two things, in my opinion. I'll explain. We surrender to the Almighty the everyday logic, or what I call the mercantile logic, or the logic of the businessman, the logic of the utilitarian person. We embrace another logic, Misinai. And secondly, we also surrender the everyday will, which is very utilitarian, very superficial, and we embrace another will, the will of Misinai. And this is not, as I told you before, it's not just drush, homiletics, it's halacha. The Rav tells you that this is what Kabbalah's Olam HaShemayim is. So these are very, very general thoughts, which really just center on the endeavor and the engagement of Gashmius at large. A little bit of Busser, but Mr. Shem, as we continue tomorrow and in the coming days, we'll try to zero in even more closely on the significance of eating meat specifically and where the Torah's Hashkafa pro-meat and not vegetarian, what it's trying to communicate and where that leads us. And we're going to have a wonderful day. Mr. Shem, see you tomorrow. Don't forget, 9:10 and 9:30, Siyata Dishmaya.